So we are here at Rexall Place. A little outfit from Ohio is in town. Black Keys, sitting here with Patrick Carney, drummer for the aforementioned Black Keys. Welcome back to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, man. It's good to see you guys here again.
Thanks, yeah. We're glad to be back.
Feels like you've been here a few times in the last few years. You guys have been, well, doing a lot of touring, obviously.
Yeah, this is our third time in 4 years.
And you've had some good support acts with you, too. A couple years ago, it was Cage the Elephant, then it was Arctic Monkeys, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And Jake Bugg this time around.
Yeah.
How's the tour going so far?
Great. You know, we divided the North American tour into three legs. So each leg, we're bringing out a different group to tour with us. So the first leg was Cage the Elephant again. And this leg is Jake Bugg. And then the final leg of the tour, we have St. Vincent.
Now, of course, this tour, you guys are in support of your last album, Turn Blue,
uh-huh.
which not only was number one in Canada, but it was number one in the United States as well. And it was the first time the Black Keys have been number one on the Billboard charts.
Yep.
And the week in May when it was released, you guys actually beat Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
That's got to be kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's strange, you know. I mean, but, you know, it's different. You know, the charts nowadays, you know, there's a lot of artists getting number one albums nowadays that wouldn't be able to get them 10, 15, 20 years ago. Because of the single, now that singles are kind of popular again, people are able to buy the song a la carte, you know. You end up seeing, like, people who, you know, a lot of groups who, like, have fans who like to listen to more than just, like, one pop song. You know, selling more albums, I guess.
You guys are an interesting story because you have this tremendous back catalog. You have several albums underneath you, but it really wasn't until Brothers came out a few years ago that you just went right to the top and all of a sudden became festival headliners and stadium tours and all that good stuff. Are you still a few years into it surprised at how fast everything went from,
well, you know,
from here to here?
It went fast. Like, it accelerated a lot when, like, as far as, like, our slot, you know, I don't know, being able to headline festivals and sell more records, like, and getting songs on the radio, all that stuff didn't really happen for us until 2010. But, yeah, we were making records for 8 years prior to that happening. And we'd seen it with other bands. We'd seen bands go from, like, you know, after our first record came out, we saw bands put out a record and go straight to, like, headlining festivals and having platinum records very quickly. And when things do kind of start happening, like, as far as if you have like a hit song or something, yeah, it goes quick. But for us, we'd always watch some of these bands go straight up and then come straight back down. And I feel like it's like the longer it takes you to get to the wherever your peak is, like, I think usually the longer your career will last, I guess, the longer the whole thing is. That's why I'm Dan and I were, like, for a while, like, kind of just, like, mystified and just had resolved, like, to the idea that we would never, that wasn't even in the cards for us. We never even were striving for it after at all, really, you know. We just were making records and really happy with the way our career was, you know. And then we made this record and things just kind of took off. We weren't expecting it, you know. I'm glad it didn't happen until 8 years in, because I'm just glad it happened, because it's cool to see the other side of it, you know. But for a long time, like, it wasn't even up to that point. Like, I didn't even know that bands like us could be playing arenas. I'd never been to an arena concert until we played our first arena concert, and that was in Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it wasn't until that tour of 2011. The first show in Vancouver was outdoors, and our second show of the tour was here. And this is the first arena we ever played. So I'd never been to an arena concert until we played here.
To Edmonton?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, look at that. A little piece of little trivia for you. That's very exciting. You've done lots of since then.
Yeah.
Obviously, lots of big shows and very cool things. You've done SNL. You've done all the late night things. Uh-huh. Do you have anything in your mind that's your big, like, holy shit moment? Does anything stick out?
I mean, SNL is a big one. You know, we've done it three times, and every time it feels that way. You know, I grew up watching that show, and I had some really, like, you know, intense experiences watching music for the first time, because, you know, when I was really getting into music, when I was like 10, 11, 12, I'd never been to a concert, so the only time I'd see, like, you know, anything would be on MTV or SNL. And I remember watching Nirvana play in January, I guess, of 92, and I just got my first guitar for Christmas a few weeks earlier, and that was mind-blowing. So, yeah, it's always crazy to play that show. You know, being at the Grammys is always a little bit surreal, too, but I'd say SNL for sure.
Cool.
Is the big one.
Now, you guys, I know when you're traveling and your live show, you have a bunch of musicians behind you and even helping you out when you record. But for the most part, Black Keys is still regarded as being a two-piece. You and
yeah, I mean, we've only ever had, you know, Danger Mouse plays on the last couple records. You know, he'll play keyboards here and there. more so, especially on this record. But prior to that, the only other person that's played on our records is my Uncle Ralph, who played flute and some bass clarinet on Attack and Release.
Wow.
And Mark Rebo, and my uncle and Mark Rebo played in Tom Waits' band together. Rebo played guitar a little bit on Attack and Release. And our friend Gabe, way back on the first record, played Moog synthesizer. So yeah, I mean, when we're in the studio, it's basically just Dan and I. And the thing is, when we tour, we got to the point in 2010, we'd made Attack and Release in 2008, and when we went into the studio to make that record with Danger Mouse, we wanted to make a record and without considering how we were going to execute it live. You know, we wanted to make bass guitar more prominent. We wanted to use keyboards to emphasize like melodies, all these things that we kind of had been avoiding, because for us, the most important thing for a long time was that we had to be able to tour the
music.
Yeah, we had to be able to tour the songs. And we got to this point where we needed to change it up. We felt a little bit constricted, you know, like by just only focusing on how we could perform the songs live with guitars, drums, vocals, and that's it. So we made Attack and Release, and when we went on tour, we could only play like 3 songs off that record live as a 2-piece because there's so many other things going on. And we went into the studio to make Brothers, and we approached it the same way as we did with Attack and Release. And we came out of the studio, and we're about to get ready to go on tour. We realized we couldn't play a single song as a 2-piece. So since then, we've been touring as a 4-piece.
So that's pretty cool how it's evolved over the years and how you've been forced to evolve. But the reason I wanted to bring it up, you guys being a 2-piece, is because it's becoming seemingly more of a prominent thing. You know, you had the White Stripes, and there were some long before, but for the most part, it was White Stripes, then you guys, and now you have bands like Death From Above here in Canada. Uh-huh. You have Royal Blood coming out of England, and uh-huh. You know, you're getting more and more of these bands.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like you may have started something, getting these 2-pieces?
No. I mean, I think like through the history of music, there's like trios and there's duos. And then there's like the Beatles. And the Beatles are Lennon and McCartney. And the way that like George Harrison operated in there is almost like a solo artist in the band, I guess. I think it's like really common to find like 2 musicians who share like a passion, a work ethic, and complement each other in a certain way. And I think that that's like the most basic form of any band. It's like whatever. You got Rolling Stones is what, like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, you know, whatever. Hall & Oates, you know, Mick Jones and Joe Strummer. Everybody's contributing in the band, obviously, but there's like usually these kind of, it's like nucleus.
There's a core.
Well, yeah, and everything. But, you know, we didn't want to just be a 2-piece. We started off as a 3-piece, you know. It's just we come from a small town in Ohio. It's not like terribly small, but it's, you know, 200,000 people. And of that group, like maybe we knew when we were growing up 150 people who were our age and into music. And of that group, maybe a half of them played instruments. And of that group, maybe like a third of those people had any interest in playing anything like us. It's really hard to find people to play with, you know. That's like the most amazing thing about any band, is that the people in the band found each other to play with, I think. So, you know, when we first started the group, like, I mean, Dan and I have been playing as a 2-piece, as like a duo or whatever, jamming since we were in high school, you know. And we were, you know, Dan was obsessed with T-Model Ford, and I wasn't like listening to anything that was actually necessarily a 2-piece, but I was listening to a lot of stuff. You know, this is like the mid-90s, a lot of stuff with unconventional lineups, you know. One of my favorite bands back then, and still, was John Spencer Blues Explosion, and they were 2 guitars and drums. In high school, I was in a band with some friends. It was like 2 guitars and drums. It was just the thing to do. It was like the thing to be different or whatever, you know. And another thing is no one wants to play the bass, you know. When you're in high school, like, everyone wants to play the guitar.
Yeah, bass doesn't get girls.
Well, I mean, I don't know anybody that plays music to get girls. I played it because it was my favorite thing. You know what I mean? Music is my favorite thing to play. But it's my favorite pastime. But yeah, you know. So when we've decided like to start the band, our friend Gabe, who's now in a group called Gap Dream, he was playing with us for the first couple like a month probably, and he just wasn't feeling it. He was on to some other stuff, you know. But yeah, so. But the original kind of lineup, what we were going to go for, like once we got a record deal, was guitar, drums, vocals, and Moog synthesizer playing bass lines, you know? And when Gabe decided to leave the band, we tried to find somebody to play like second guitar or something. And we realized like if one of our closest friends wasn't willing to like put in the work, then we couldn't rely on like a stranger. So we just went ahead as a 2-piece.
You may do.
Yeah, I think it's cool, you know? I think that like in a certain way, like for instance, now, like, we play on stage, and, like, yeah, we're two-person band, but we can't play the songs live as a two-person band, but mm-hmm. in the studio we are, and I think there's a lot of bands that are basically like that, where there might be a band, but there's usually two people, or, you know, maybe doing a lot of the writing or whatever.
I think a lot of your early days, you know, you guys put in a lot of hard work, did a lot of touring, and uh-huh. you still see that today. You guys have a very extensive tour schedule. Is there anything you have, now that you're at the level you're at, is there anything you have on the road with you that you didn't have 10 years ago that you couldn't do without now?
I mean, everything that we have on the road, aside for our instruments and our clothes, are things that we didn't have back then. I mean, we're able to tour now more than we, you know, touring in a van, like, is unbelievably hard. It was easier for us probably than most bands because it was just two of us, and you get like a four-person band, and you get them on the road for 6 weeks in a van. It's the hardest. It's like the hardest thing. It's fun the first few times you do it. It's fun, but when it, you know, you end up getting sick, you end up not making any money. Usually, you end up eating like shit. Our tour right now is easy, but yeah, on the road, things I can't do without. I mean, like when we first started touring, like, you know, we would bring like CD booklets with like, you know, 1,000 or whatever, 500 CDs and a Walkman, Discman. And we both bought cell phones before our first tour. These were like the old school, really old school Nokia things. You couldn't, like, this is before texting and stuff. This is when making a phone call, one of those was still expensive. So I think really, honestly, like touring with the iPhone is kind of awesome because you have all your music, you have games, you can like read about music, you can watch, you know, it's kind of the most amazing thing.
Cool.
It's something that like I kind of miss, like sometimes, what it's like touring without having that kind of stuff, you know, because I just remember like every single tour I would bring out the book Confederacy of Dunces, and every single tour I would get halfway through it and get sick of it and stop reading it, and then the next tour I start reading it again and get to the same page almost, stop doing it. But at least I was reading more, even though it's the same half of a book.
Did you ever finish it?
No.
I want to ask you, you like Pearl Jam and Queens of the Stone Age are a few of the bands that do the custom show posters for every city you play in.
Uh-huh.
And I want to ask you why you guys decided to do that for every show instead of just a general tour poster, and how involved you are with picking the artwork for it. It's a really cool idea.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like our idea. It was something that happened when we were touring back in the day, like 2002, 2003, whatever. We would show up and the promoter, local promoter, would call their friend or whatever, have them make a poster. And before you knew it, like, we were going to cities and just having cool posters. And at one point for one tour, for some reason, we had a singular poster made for the whole tour. And we were like, and we hated it. I mean, each show should have its unique kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, we're not involved in choosing the artist, really. We have people submit stuff and then pick, you know, what we like. But, you know, it's a cool thing to do. And it's cool. We like to keep all, we each have like two posters from every show, and it's just cool to have around. And it's cool. The artists actually get to make some money off of it, which is a good thing.
And lastly, I want to ask you, there seems to be the thing to do nowadays is a rock documentary, behind the scenes look, or what the Foo Fighters are doing now with Sonic Highways that I know, I don't know if you're part of it, I think Dan is. Have you guys ever felt the need to do a behind-the-scenes look, a little documentary on the road or something?
I mean, we, you know, there's constantly people filming stuff. I hate being filmed, though, honestly. I mean, this is one thing, interview is one thing, but I hate being filmed trying to act natural. Like, when we're in the studio, if somebody turns the camera on, I'll walk out of the room. There's nothing to me more awful. I mean, and also being filmed on stage is fine. You know, that's a performance. But when you're being filmed, like, socializing or trying to be creative, to me, it instantly crosses the line into, like, oversharing. You know, that's like, you know, I'm like, totally happy, like, if people are interested, explaining to them what our career's been like, what it's like making music, what it's like touring. But there's a certain thing, like, you know, where I think it's almost vain to think people even want to see certain things, you know? Like, people really want to see me eat lunch? I don't think so.
Cool. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here, and best of luck with your show and the rest of your tour.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot.